Welcome to the Creative Financing Podcast, where you'll learn how to structure terms and use various creative financing strategies to create profitable deals for short and long-term wealth. Whether you're a buy and hold investor, wholesaler, or flipper, learning creative financing will help you do more deals and unlock profits that you may not even know existed. On the Creative Financing Podcast, we break down actual deals we and our guests are doing and simplify the methods and terms used to execute these strategies. Now, let's dive in and create some terms.
Hello and welcome to the Creative Financing Podcast. I'm your host, Jonathan Gallegos, here with
Jeff Rappaport.
And today, guys, this is part two in our series of four ways to use lease options. So this series is all about lease options, the best and highest use for those lease options. On our last episode, we went over pretty much a scenario where you have a seller that makes little to no cash flow, and you bring in a buyer, you meet them in the middle, and you collect a option deposit to get paid on that deal, basically wholesaling the lease option to a tenant buyer. But really the scenario was that there's little to no cash flow for that buyer. The buyer's payment was like $1,800 a month and the market rents are, you know, $19,000 to $2,000. So for you to bring in a buyer that can pay a little more or right at market rents, and then provide a option deposit up front, that's a win-win for everyone, for all parties involved. So now we're going to go over scenario number two.
Yes. So, which is exactly like scenario number one, other than we're going to just change a couple little things. So we have a property that's worth $350,000, and that's the ARV. They owe $250,000. They have about $100,000 in equity. Needs about $30,000 in updating. We talked about what kind of updating does that mean? What kind of repairs will it mean? Same thing goes here. Don't get overly, I'm not saying that you can't lease option stuff that needs quite a bit of work, but you want to be a little more sure, or at least get yourself 30 days to find out if it's going to be feasible or not.
Yeah, and on the last episode, you mentioned go back and find other properties that are renting in the area and see if any of them's dated and see what those market rents are, both with properties that are fixed up and upgraded and then properties that are not. So that was a great nugget from that last episode.
Well, I mean, if you start seeing properties in that rent range that aren't renting for 30, 60 days or so, and they're dated, that might tell you something. Keep an eye out. Okay, so here's the main difference for this one. The payment is $1,608 PITI, as opposed to where it was $1,800 almost in the last example. The taxes run $1,900 a year. The seller wants $315,000 instead of $325,000, so a little less. And now the rents will rent between $2,000 and $2,100. Okay. So a couple slight differences. Rents up a little bit.
Payment's $1,600.
Yep. Payment's down a little bit. Yeah. And asking price is down a little bit.
What was asking again?
$315,000.
Okay. Yep.
So what we're going to look at in this scenario, first of all, the scenario in our first example would work on this deal too. We can certainly go and just arbitrage our option deposit and wholesale this deal, be in it and out of it. And if that's your business model, by all means, it would work on this deal as well. However, I know people are looking at trying to generate passive income, and this would allow you or would be a good example to start looking for where you could actually stay in the middle, which would mean that you are doing a sandwich lease option. Basically, what that means is that I'm lease optioning from the seller with specific terms, and I am given the permission to sublet this property with different terms to my tenant buyer. And then I'm going to collect the difference of the option deposit the monthly rent, and potentially equity at the end. And we'll show you how that plays out here right now. So same kind of deal, right? Let's say that this seller is a burned out landlord. Maybe they were renting this property for $2,000 a month. They were making, you know, a $400 a month cash flow on the surface. But remember, most likely they're responsible for the maintenance and repairs. And they may have some utility costs that they're responsible for as well. And they certainly have vacancy when tenants move out.
Yeah.
So they may be okay either just getting a payment that covers their payment or a small cash flow, like $100, $150. And that's where the key comes in. If they're willing to take less for their payment and gives you a bigger spread for that rental payment, that's typically where you would want to look at staying in the middle.
Right.
So in this case, let's say that we offer the seller $315, his asking price, and we're going to pay $1,750 in rent.
Okay.
That $1,750 is going to give them a $150 a month positive cash flow, because they're not responsible for anything else at this point.
Yeah.
So they know that they're going to get that every month. In the normal case, they may get more than that most months, but as soon as some kind of repair costs come up or it's time to mow the lawn, who knows what they've been paying for, for the last several years.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's say, $1,750 a month, they're going to make $142 a month cash flow. You're offering $315, their asking price, and you ask for, let's say in this case, a five-year term, because now you'd rather have a longer term than a shorter term if you're going to stay in the middle.
Okay, for 5 years.
The reason why is that you're getting passive income each month. It would make more sense to extend it out longer if you can. You don't have to. You could do a 3 year or 2 year even, but you might want to just because, sometimes you got to go through a couple of tenant buyers before you get one to buy. And the longer term that you have, the more, one, you get to keep collecting those option deposits. Two, rents may increase in the next 12 to 24 months. And, you don't really want to give one tenant buyer your whole 5 years if you don't have to. I'd rather see if I could get a 5 to 7 year term here, and I'd offer my tenant buyer a 2 year term with the right to extend for a third year for some money. Maybe $2,500 extension fee, which is paid to me to just have that one additional year to try to get qualified. Now, if they are not able to, and we have to move on from them, we still have time to go find someone else that potentially will buy this property. Okay.
Yeah.
Does that make sense so far?
Yep.
Okay.
And we're gonna
All right. So again, but we're going to look at trying to get an option deposit of at least 10 grand. We may or may not offer the seller some of that 10 grand. Maybe does the seller need a security deposit if we're the ones that are handling everything? They really don't, right?
Responsible. Yeah.
Yeah, they really don't. And that would be the argument that I make, is that, hey, you don't need the security deposit. I do. If they do any damage, I got to fix it for you. So now I'm the one that should get the security deposit. So now I'm going to try to keep the whole 10 grand. Now let's say I'm going to rent it for 2,100. It was just rented for 2,000. now as a lease option, I should easily be able to get 21, maybe 21.50, maybe even depending on the condition and the location, maybe even the size 22. Don't get crazy here. What I would suggest is you stay right around that market rent or slightly above. When you think that you're going to just get whatever amount that you want, you're going to be surprised you're not. So, but 2100 certainly within the realm. So you're going to make a $350 a month cash flow. That's the difference between collecting 2100 from your tenant buyer and then paying your seller 1750. So now for the next 2-3 years, you're getting $350 a month cash flow. You don't own this house. You're not responsible for any maintenance and repairs. You've already gotten $10,000 up front. Now let's say that your tenant buyer is going to exercise their option and buy. So remember, their option deposit can either go toward the purchase price or it doesn't necessarily have to. That's something that you'll have to decide. I've always made it part of the purchase price if they buy. So let's say that I'm selling this property for, I don't know, 335, 340. Let's call it 335, okay? So we're selling that to our tenant buyer, and or we're giving them the option at 335. They put down 10. So they now owe 325, right?
Yep.
We owe the seller 315.
Yeah.
So at the end, we would get another $10,000. Well, we'd get 10 up front from our option deposit. We get $350 a month for as long as this would go. And then we'd get another $10,000 at the end.
Yeah.
Make sense?
Yep.
That's called the sandwich lease option. Now, maybe we could even get a higher price for the property, and our back end would be even better. Now you can structure these kinds of deals. And I always go back to Joe McCall, because Joe really focuses on lease options. I've done some training with Joe. We've had him on our show. And I can tell you that Joe kind of does what I do with lease options as I do with owner financing. And that would be that Joe probably would make two offers here, maybe three offers. Here's a cash offer. It's going to be much lower than what you're asking. Here's a wholesale offer. I'm basically offering you, top rent, top price. Just give me enough time to go find that tenant buyer and I'll add my fee on top and I'll be out of it. Or, hey, I want you to discount your equity and I want you to discount your rent, but I'll be the one in the middle. So you won't have to deal directly with the tenant buyer. You deal with me. I'll handle all the issues that come up. You won't have any.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yep.
Super easy. The only thing I don't love about sandwich lease options is protecting yourself while you're in the middle. And we've talked about this on previous episodes.
Yeah.
At the very least, you'd want a memorandum of security. What's that?
How to secure your interest in it over that time.
Correct. Period. Yeah, because you show nowhere on title, right? I mean,
yeah.
You've got the seller, and then you've got this tenant buyer that would be the one purchasing it. Where do you show up? So you'd want to put some kind of notice of interest or a memorandum, letting the world know, more specifically the title companies know, that, hey, before you go do anything, you got to deal with me. That would also protect everyone involved from the seller trying to sell it to someone else, refinancing, adding more debt, that kind of thing. And I would tell you, consult with an attorney to figure out the best way to secure your position in all of this.
Yeah.
Especially if you don't have to go back to the seller and tell them, look, I need you to, this is the amount of money I'm going to make from doing this deal with you. I need you to help me secure myself on this deal. I'd really rather not do that. Would it be the absolute worst thing to do? No. But I don't really want to go to the seller and say, look, I'm going to make, you know, if I was making $25,000 on the back end, I was making $10,000 or $15,000 on upfront, and I'm making $400 or $500 a month. That might be a little difficult conversation to have with the seller about, hey, this is the amount of money I'm making. The seller might say, "What? Why are you making all this money? You know, this is my property. Why do I even need you?"
Yeah.
So I would love to find out a way to secure yourself without having to actually go to the seller and working something out.
Yeah, and we've always talked about the risk being that, yeah, like you said, the seller finds out how much money you're making on the deal, and then they just go direct to your tenant buyer and says, hey, look, you just buy this property from me, and then just cut you out on that back end.
See, and I personally like the first example where we wholesale lease options. I've done a number of those, and they're fairly easy. And I had mentioned the only thing I don't like is that with owner finance, I can get a much larger down payment, which allows me to pay the seller some money and still get, you know, a good chunk for our fee. In this example, I'd much rather do owner financing, even if it's contract for deed where the title stays with the seller, because even if I'm secured by contract for deed, there's a chain of title, right? So I might not show up on title, but I'm going to have that notice of interest. And then my new buyer is also going to have a notice of interest. There's going to be two of them that show agreements in place with deeds held in escrow. Or I might even be open to, hey, maybe I buy where title transfers to me, and then I do the lease option. So now I'm actually right in the middle of chain of title. There's no way that I get cut out of anything. I like that idea a little better. I'm just secured. But the sandwich lease option or the wholesale lease option are really easy to pitch to sellers. There's not a lot of risk for them, and they still retain ownership, and why wouldn't someone be open to this? It's basically like, I don't need a property manager anymore. You're going to manage it, or it's the only thing that needs to be managed is I need to make sure I get paid every month.
Yeah. Yep. Cool. Goes to.
You like that, Jonathan?
Yeah.
You're going to like the next one a lot.
Yeah. I was just going to say, like, for leased options, this is kind of the holy grail of a lease option. I'm sure you got the next one's better, but where you can collect an option deposit up front, cash flow in the middle, and then when your buyer executes on the option, you collect the additional margin. In this example, we used, you'd get $10,000 up front, $350,000 cash flow for 5 years, and then another $10,000 on the back end when your buyer buys at that 335, because we got, you know, we're buying the property. We have the option to buy the property at 315K, and we're selling it to our buyer. We're optioning it to our buyer for 335. So, yeah, this is a great deal. And like you said, Jeff, I think it's an easy pitch to a seller that doesn't have much cash flow. And you know, doesn't want the headache of managing the property.
And I think that's a great point that you just brought up. But let's say this property's free and clear, so it does have great cash flow. But couldn't we still offer this seller $1,500? So he's still getting, you know, pretty close. Maybe not quite as much, but he no longer has any worries, right? Yeah. It's also possible that he could have a property management company handling all this that he's paying 8 to 10% on that he could now eliminate, right? So there's a number of ways. It doesn't really matter what the debt is, other than if the debt's high, then we're probably looking to wholesale it. And when I say the debt, it's really the payment. It's not really the debt, it's what the payment is compared to what the rents are. But if the second option was free and clear, and you were able to negotiate a $1,500 a month rent and a $300,000 purchase price, I mean, that's a home run for you. That's a really good deal.
Cool. Well, let's wrap it up there, Jeff. Guys, if you want to reach us, you can reach us on our hotline right now. If you guys have questions, we're actually creating I want to preface this with, we're creating a Facebook group for creative financing. And if you guys have a deal structuring scenario where you're wondering how you can structure something, we'd prefer that those questions go to that Facebook group. So look for that here in the near future if it's not already up. But on our hotline, if you're interested in becoming an apprentice with Jeff, or you're interested in the educational program that we're putting together, reach out to us there. And that hotline number is 877-409-8090. And again, you can text Creative Financing or CFP to that to get special access to a video on creating offers, seller finance offers on a single family home from start to finish. It's something that Jeff put together for you guys. So definitely get that. If you don't, it's kind of a no-brainer. So text Creative Financing or CFP to 877-409-8090. All of our episodes can be found online at thecreativefinancingpodcast.com. We're also on Facebook, The Creative Financing Podcast, and Instagram, The Creative Financing Podcast. So look for us there. Jeff, any last words from you, my friend?
No, other than, but we've now gone for 2+ years doing this podcast. We're over probably around 110 or so episodes. And we have a huge, I don't think it's going to be this week of this episode, but the next one I think we'll reach 100,000 downloads, which is a big deal to me because I never thought that we would get this far. And we've done it. We just started using social media in the last month. But my hope now is that we can really blow this up. I want to triple our audience. I want to get, 300,000 downloads in the next year. And we can't do that without your help. And if you want to see some different things on our program, call the hotline, leave us a message, tell us what you want to see, what would be most helpful to you, and then spread the word for us. Share, that would really help us out a lot.
For sure. For sure. Cool. All right, guys. Until next time, go out there and create some terms.
Thanks for listening to the Creative Financing Podcast. We need your feedback to continue to bring you the best strategies in creative financing. So please subscribe, rate, and review the show on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. We greatly appreciate your ear, and please pass this on. Until next time, create some terms. This show offers general information on creative financing strategies and real estate investments. Nothing contained herein should be considered personal, legal, or financial advice. Every state has individual laws governing the use and type of documents used to execute strategies discussed herein. You should consult with a local licensed real estate broker and attorney before relying on any information contained herein. Information is not guaranteed, and opinions of the guests are their own. Profits are not guaranteed, and there's always inherent risk in real estate investing.